is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brock Ward, you are. And Brock, you are.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
And that's fire!
Let's go, Brock and Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports application. A little formal Friday action today, which would be great. Beautiful day incoming. Supposed to be in the 60s today, maybe 70s tomorrow. Let's go. I have to quickly start off the show today with a brief offer. It was a good run, but if anybody would like a puppy, I'm happy to give you one.
Oh, wow.
Great dog, poops 12 times a day.
Oh.
Including at least three or four times per night. I need to sleep. If you want my dog, just let me know. I'll ship her to you free. Like
that's
just you can
normal,
have her.
Right?
Wow.
12's not normal.
I know she's going to the vet today. It's a lot. It's her job.
Dirty.
Like it is just nonstop. She's really perfect other than this, but man, I've basically not slept. So apologies in advance for whatever comes out of my mouth today. It's not pretty. It's not a pretty picture over here in the Salk family. So just want to give you guys fair warning. All right. The Seahawks have a quarterback. Does this change everything? Does this take them out of the draft? Does this mean they have a potential future guy? Why Sam Howell? Been thinking about that since yesterday. I know Brock had his thoughts, which he put up yesterday on the website and Instagram and Twitter, etc. And you can go watch that little video that Brock did from his car. I like when he does those. Those are great. I was thinking about it for a while. Why Sam Howell? Well, they needed a second quarterback, right? That was always going to happen. They weren't going to go into the season with just Geno Smith. So there was always going to be some second quarterback here and maybe a third, depending. If you're looking at some of the other guys sort of in his range in terms of age, price, value, et cetera, well, he's got a lot more experience than DTR has gotten in Cleveland. He played like one or two games and was hurt. He's got more experience than Huntley and maybe is better. I don't know. I know I kind of like Huntley, but I may be alone on that train. He's tough, right? Talk to some folks in Washington, and we'll hear more about him from Bram Weinstein, one of my favorites, who's going to join us at 6:30 this morning and just kind of give us a little rundown. Bram's a voice of the Commanders, and he also hosts a show there in Washington, used to do SportsCenter, and he's a friend. He's a good dude. He'll join us at 6:30, and I'm sure he'll say he's a tough guy. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be very coachable. He's got some traits they like. Right. He can throw the ball into tight windows. He's willing and able. Got a strong arm. Right. Costs a lot less, than Justin Fields, certainly in terms of salary and possibly in terms of what you'd have to give up. So, you know, you can see some reasons why they would have chosen Sam Howell. In fact, we had a caller the other day. We should pull that for Brock, the caller who was like, yeah, I think that's what they're going to do is trade for Sam Howell. He tweeted at me yesterday. He's like, yeah, man. Nice job. Like, he nailed it. He nailed the Sam Howell thing. That was pretty good. Here's the thing that I believe, after thinking about it for a while. Why Sam Howell? Yeah, those are all upside traits. There's no doubt. But it also tells me, and this is just logic. This is not, you know, report. They must not feel like they can move up far enough in this draft to get the guy they want. Right? I mean, if John really does like this, you know, apparently legendary quarterback class and maybe believes those top four guys are franchise kinds of quarterbacks, because I don't think anyone believes that Sam Howell is. I've not talked to anybody who thinks he's a franchise guy. NFL starter? Sure. Franchise quarterback? I haven't heard anybody say that, right? That doesn't appear to be in the cards for him. Remember, the dude threw more interceptions and was sacked more often than anybody in the league last year. Not a great combination if you're trying to figure out whether a guy makes good decisions. Means he holds on to the ball for a while, and when he lets it go, there's a decent chance that it's going to get picked off.
Yeah, 21 touchdowns and 21 interceptions is not what you want to see.
No.
But I think they also had him throwing more than almost any other quarterback in the NFL, which is a very weird thing to do if you're the Commanders.
You're absolutely right. He threw more attempts than any quarterback in the league last year. But the interception, so I just looked at percentage because I wanted to take that into account. the interception percentage is still pretty ugly, and the sacks are still more than any other player. And you know, you gotta lower those numbers if you want to be known as a good decision maker.
Oh,
so
I agree, and I have my, you know, I'm skeptical, but I just think like you think about how they eased Russell Wilson into things, and like the Commanders certainly did not do that for Sam Howell.
No, they did actually the opposite of that. In fact, John Keim was on yesterday. Let me see if I can find this. He was on yesterday with Bumpin' Stacy, I believe. Bumpin' Stacy?
No, John Keim has his own.
Oh, this is from
he's
his
ESPN
show.
Insider. He my does bad. Like a little video podcast.
Oh, my bad. I think he's coming on with somebody today. But he said this yesterday about Howell.
Was it all his fault? No. The game planning or the play calling, whatever you want to say, I don't think that helped him. I don't think the construction of the line helped him, but I don't think that he or others anticipated him throwing around 70% of the time. I mean, this should have been a team that was running the ball a lot more than it did, and instead they relied on Howell, and I think that was just a tough way to go. But, you know, there's still things, there are parts of his game that he has to develop. You know, his anticipation skills, improving his anticipation skills, improving his trust, working with some receivers down the field and trusting that, you know, to trust them on some of those 50-50 balls, things like that. Now that you can help that with experience.
I don't know whether I want him throwing any more 50-50 balls than he's been throwing, because it seems like some of them might be 30-70 against. But point taken. I mean, he was not developed very well in Washington, but it's not like he was a first or second round pick to start with. The guy was a fifth round pick. So is he a franchise quarterback? Probably not. Does it tell me that the Seahawks are now unlikely to trade up in the first round? Yes. That's probably my biggest takeaway from yesterday. Maybe they still acquire a quarterback in the draft this year, but it'd be very surprising to me now if they were to do what Brock talked about the other day and trade up. And it might be as simple as John said, hey, I'm never going to get into the top three. Those teams need quarterbacks, want quarterbacks, are going to draft quarterbacks. And if I want J.J. McCarthy, either I don't think he's worth the resources I'd need to give up to get him, or I don't have the resources I would need to give up to get him. Because, you know, he's going to go, according to a lot of the experts we keep talking to, a lot closer to pick six than he is to pick 16. So if you're John Schneider, you look at the landscape and say, all right, maybe I do want to do that. Maybe I do think that would be the best potential scenario, and I don't know whether he's thinking that, but maybe he does. But it's just not feasible.
Yeah.
It's not possible given the resources that we have. So let's pivot. Let's make sure we have the backup quarterback we want who has some level of upside, who can come in and compete for this job a little bit. Not right away. I mean, he was pretty clear that Geno's going to be the starter. But, you know, Sam Howell started more games than Geno did last year. Yeah,
also going a little bit closer to pick six, I think.
Uh-huh.
Also going a little bit closer to pick six.
that's a good one.
I think that's what the part that jumped out to me the most was, just see like, yeah, Geno's our guy. He's going to be competing for a backup spot versus, yeah, we're bringing him in to see if he can compete for the starting spot.
Yeah, they were pretty clear.
Saying that right away was the part where I was like, okay, well, he's definitely not the guy of the future.
That's it doesn't feel like it. Or maybe they just feel, I mean, it feels kind of like Drew Lock last year. Like, hey, you're here, but we're going to let you, you know, we're going to let you develop some more, and maybe you end up being our project that we take advantage of. Maybe it's, you know, the Giants who are getting to take advantage of whatever help they gave Drew Lock last year.
If there's any durability concerns with Geno, we don't really have those with you.
No, I mean, he played every game last year. He's never missed a game, which is great. I mean, that's a good sign for him. He's supposed to be a tough dude, and he runs around a little bit. He has, you know, more running yards certainly than Geno did last year. So, look, I'm not, like, upset about this deal yesterday. Feels like they gave up kind of, I mean, not nothing, right? I mean, to go from the third to the fourth round in a draft that is top heavy, I don't love it.
And you don't have a second?
Yeah.
So you're waiting for the third.
Right. I mean, you now have a first, third, and two fourths. That's okay. Yeah. It doesn't feel, I mean, and if you guys want to, you know, if you got a moment to go read my column this morning at seattlesports.com, it's just trying to figure out what the Seahawks are doing. I don't get it. I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm saying I truly don't understand it. It might be genius. I just can't tell what the plan is. I can't tell if they think that they are on the verge of contention or if they think they're nowhere close. I can't tell. I can't tell based on the moves they've made what it is they're trying to do.
I mean, in today's NFL, can if you're unless you're at the very bottom, can anyone really tell? Like, I feel like it can turn out different than you think for a lot of teams.
Maybe. I mean, you should certainly be right about that. I guess I don't follow the other 31 teams as closely, so I don't know the answer to your question. It's a good one. But I always feel like I have a decent sense of what direction the Seahawks are turning in, and I'm not sure that this offseason allows me to understand it. Again, that's not a criticism. I want to be really clear. That's not a criticism of what they've done. I just don't know that I'm smart enough to see the whole plan, or maybe we just don't have enough information
yet. I guess I'm just thinking about the Rams turnaround last year.
Yeah.
Like, we thought they were going to be pretty bad.
Yep.
And they had a good draft and had some guys we'd never heard of before. And so I don't know. I definitely don't think they think they're starting over from scratch or anything.
But it feels like, you know, a lot of the deals they've made are very, very short term.
Saving yourself for the future.
Right. All of the cap hits they took, the dead money was all this year rather than spread out. So, like, there's some evidence to suggest that they're punting on 24. But then there's other evidence to suggest that they don't feel that way at all and that they love their nucleus and they're going with it. And I don't really understand the quarterback situation long term. So I just don't understand. And maybe at some point this vision will become more clear. Maybe I need to go on an ayahuasca retreat and I'll understand the entirety of what the Seahawks are doing. Yep, that's the plan. Maybe darkness, ayahuasca, and we'll be good to go. We'll come back with everything you need to know. Wasn't the only move the Seahawks made yesterday. In fact, Brock Heward, as usual, got it right. Dead right. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Day four of free agency might have been the busiest yet for the Seahawks as they found themselves a quarterback in the trade market of all places. Found a middle linebacker as well. We'll get to him in a sec. First, they acquire Sam Howell from Washington in a deal that sends a third and fifth rounder for a fourth and sixth to the Commanders. Howell was their primary starter last year. In fact, he started all 17 games for them, led the leagues in passing attempts, but also with 21 picks and the most sacks. He's not going to be starting here, at least to start.
Young, you know, he's 23 years old and has 18 starts, you know, in the league already. And, you know, he's the same age as like Daniels from LSU and Rattler and Penix. And he's a year younger than Bo Nix. And, you know, so, you know, we're just really excited to be able to acquire him. And, you know, we know he's a serious dude. And, you know, he's into it. He works his tail off. We got great reviews on him and we love him coming out of college. So, yeah, we're happy to get him in the mix. And Gino's the guy and Sam will be backing him up.
Gino's the guy. Sam will be backing him up. So we know that, but also what it is they like about him. As much as he was clear that that's going to be the opening situation, there's still a little residue of Pete Carroll left over.
Well, I'm sure there's competition, but, you know, yeah, as right now, I mean, Gino, it's not like we're signing him to go and compete with Gino to be the starter, but I'm sure he's going to be giving it a run. He's a competitive guy.
Yeah, there you go. All right, that's Sean Schneider yesterday with Wyman and Bob. They also, Seahawks did finally have at least one of their linebacker spots settled. They signed former Bill Tyrell Dodson, darling of the Pro Football Focus crowd, ranking as one of the best coverage players at the position. And all hail Brock Heward on this one. He mentioned him quite a bit, and then it all went down yesterday afternoon. He was mostly a special teams player for the first few years of his career. Started just five games from 2020 to 22. But then last year, Matt Milano got hurt, and so he made 10 starts and seemed to impress. He had 2.5 sacks, 74 tackles, 6 quarterback hits, 2 passes defensed, and a forced fumble. So he got after it a little bit. He certainly filled up the box score, and apparently he's pretty good in coverage, which is exactly what they're going to need because that has been a problem for this team for a while.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, 2 days after we all had that big collective deep breath as we worried about Brian Wu having been scratched because of what we hoped was an injury, it turned out to just be he was pushed back a day, and the young starter was awesome yesterday. Went 4 perfect frames against the Brewers. Yeah, his manager liked it.
Another well-pitched game today. I thought Brian Wu was awesome. You know, in control, had both the fastballs working, a couple of really good sweeping sliders, so really good efficient outing for him. And some of our guys in this bullpen race here coming down the stretch, throwing the ball well against Snyder. Another really good outing there. So, and Buttray, throwing the ball, working on a breaking ball today a little bit.
Yeah, so that's nice to see. Remember, this came with an extra day of rest, something that he's going to get a little bit of in the first month or so of the season, and something we should probably be mindful of throughout the season. Offense wasn't bad either.
Here's a swing and a drive deep to right field. Hinkland going back, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball, into the Milwaukee bullpen. Mitch Haniger the other way with his third spring home run.
Yeah, it's always nice to see Mitch go the other way. Man, that's nice, especially in spring training, and hopefully a sign of some things to come for Haniger. Had a home run for Luis Urias yesterday, which is, you know, continue that third base thing. Those guys are battling for it, and it has been one of the more productive positions for them in the spring. Cal had a home run as well, as the Mariners get a win. And then today, Justin, what's the thing they're doing today, this spring spotlight thing?
Spring breakout.
Yeah,
excuse me. Like all the top prospects from everybody's teams. Yeah.
So it's not just Mariners and whoever they're playing. Nope. It's like everybody comes. It's sort of like the thing they do before the futures game, before the All-Star game, right? But it's just in spring training.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it's the first time they've ever done it. So cool. It's going to be a pretty interesting time to see all of these superstars.
Montez is going to be there. Celestine's going to be there.
Obviously, Colt. Emerson. Young, Harry Ford, yep.
Oh, wow. That's going to be kind of
all
fun.
Top prospects.
Oh, that's pretty sweet. Love it.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Kraken did a nice job of celebrating Jordan Eberle's 1,000th game played last night. Of course, it was in his 1,001st, so they waited until the game was finished before celebrating it in the next game. Unfortunately, it didn't lead to a win. Instead, they fall 2-1 to Washington. They allowed a late breakaway goal that was the difference. Oliver Bjorkstrand, the lone goal. Joey DeCord gave up a rough one early after misplaying a puck. You don't like to see that. In basketball, Wazoo advanced past Stanford in the quarterfinals of the Pac-12 tournament. Six players in double figures there, led by Isaac Jones, who had 16. They'll have Colorado tonight at 7:30. Winner advances to the Pac-12 final. How about that? That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour in the Brock and Salk show. Yeah, there were some nice offers of people who were willing to take Gertie. I withdraw my offer. You can't have my dog. But I would really like her to stop pooping 12 times a day.
Not good.
It's because it's, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's like twice in an hour, three times in an hour. It's rough, man.
What are you feeding her?
Nothing. That's what I don't understand. I don't understand how it comes out. She's barely eating anything. She gets a total of a cup of food every day. How can all of that turn into this much? Like, it doesn't make sense.
It's just got to be the wrong one for her, right?
It's got to be something, Justin.
It's the only thing that makes sense is that.
She's like a poop factory.
Oh.
It's remarkable. She just, like, keeps spewing out of her.
Yeah.
206 says maybe it's the hopping around. It could be, although she's not hopping quite as much. She's aging out of some of the bunny hopping that she was going through earlier, which is too bad because I like
getting more coordinated.
Yeah, she's figuring out how to run with her 4 feet in like order, mm-hmm. rather than like using them all at the same time to leap in the air over and over again.
Saw two really, really, really adorable Frenchies yesterday and thought of you. One of them was walking around the building today, yesterday
here?
When I left work. Yeah.
What was it doing?
A brindle, right?
A brindle Frenchie?
That's the dark,
dark
fur, yeah. Hmm. Yep, and it was actually a guy I knew.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll have to introduce you.
What are you talking about? You walked outside our building and ran into someone you know?
Yeah, I guess he lives right in this neighborhood.
Dude, Justin, I'm done with you for today. I'm going to need a break. I'm going to need a break from you already.
His name was Brody.
Brody?
Yeah.
You got a friend named Brody?
Yeah, Brody, bro.
What's up, Brody?
Brody to bro.
All right, from Brody to Bram, my friend Bram Weinstein is going to join us here in just a moment. He's the voice of the Washington Commanders. He got a pretty good seat to watch Sam Howell's development last year. He also hosts a radio show in Washington. Used to be on SportsCenter. He'll give us the inside scoop. Who is this guy? How good could he be? It's next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, big Friday show. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710. Brock will be in here in about 30 minutes. And get his sense of why the Seahawks have traded for Sam Howell. Is he good? Why do they want him? What is the plan here? What does it tell us about the draft and their future? I know Brock's going to weigh in. I want to learn a little bit more about this guy myself, and so let's go all the way to D.C., the nation's capital, the voice of the Commanders, my buddy Bram Weinstein. How are you, sir?
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're great. It's we have Sam Howell here in Seattle. What could be better?
Yeah. I actually, I hope you're not saying it tongue in cheek. I think you guys just made a really astute move. I left our season going, I think, right place, right time, different circumstances here. I've been talking about this on my airwaves in D.C. for the last few weeks. If you tell me in a few years this guy turns into Kirk Cousins, I wouldn't be surprised. So I think you're taking a shot on a really, really good player who's got a big upside that was in a very difficult situation last year. And because everything's different here and because we have the number two overall pick, we're moving on.
What? Why the Kirk Cousins comp?
Because I think he's got a similar skill set and ability with the predicate of, I think he is probably a touch more mobile than Cousins is, but I think he can become a very, very good pocket quarterback with the ability to extend some plays with his arm. He's accurate. I think he's got a long way to go, and this is a really – I was curious how this conversation was going to go because I wanted to see where he would go. Because this is I don't know how deep you want to get into it. This is an extremely layered, complicated story, really, with him. And I'll go back to just like what I said to you from the get-go. Like, I think under different circumstances, I don't think this team would be trading him. But because they have the number two overall pick, because that might be Drake May, who happens to be a really good friend of his, because it might be Jaden Daniels, and they're going to go in a very different direction with their offense, they're in a situation where doesn't fit is the right way to put it. It's just more like his time and place is not here, but I think he's got a time and place for sure. And in the right circumstances, I think he could become a very, very good high level quarterback.
What does he do best?
He's very accurate. Number one, the one thing I would say to you about, him as a personality that I'd like to see grow is I think if his coaching staff empowers him to be a little more vocal, he deferred to the coaching staff almost a little too much, in my opinion. I mean, part of the story here is Eric Bieniemy came in, so it's a new offense. It's an extremely shaky situation with a sale happening and a coach who's a lame duck coach if they don't win. He then installs Sam Howell to play. He's got almost no experience playing. All off of one game in week 18 that wasn't for the playoffs the year prior. They were searching for answers at quarterback for 4 years here. They give him a shot to do it. And, he like a lot of the players, as the season kind of progressed, didn't probably push back enough to what was happening in terms of game planning and on the field. Like I said, this was a rough situation for them. Like, here's this inexperienced player behind a bad offensive line throwing the ball by week 8 or 9, 10, 70% of the time. They were the highest pass-to-run ratio team in the NFL. Like, make sense of that. So I think there's a lot here that you'll look at and you'll go, okay, like, I think there's in the right place, right time, this is a different situation. He also was tracking by week 10, week 11 to be the most sacked quarterback in the history of the NFL in a single season. So he had taken a bazillion hits, and then the team went sideways, and then I think he lost his confidence as things kind of progressed and went along. He was taking so many hits, and he started having that proverbial seeing ghosts thing, feeling a little bit of pressure that he didn't feel early. But I want to go back to what I saw early in the season, which is he's tough. He's willing to take a hit. He'll put his body on the line. Hopefully he'll do a little less of it. Maybe last season we'll kind of teach him a lesson about that. But he's extremely accurate. You guys saw it when we went up there and he had to come back in the fourth quarter against you all. Mm-hmm. He threw a touchdown pass on the final play of the game in Philadelphia that sent them to overtime and had a chance to win. The guy's a gamer. Accurate. Players love him. Very coachable. Great guy in the locker room. I just want to hear him become more vocal and take more ownership of the position. And that's what I would say to your coaching staff up there. Allow him to do that.
Yeah, we're talking to Bram Weinstein, who is the voice of the Commanders, hosts a show in D.C., former SportsCenter anchor. And he and I used to host shows together occasionally on ESPN Radio, which is how I know Bram and why he's been on the show as many times over the years as he has been. It's clear. I mean, some of those upsides are fantastic, and some of those strengths. How does a Seahawk fan put that together with leading the league in sacks, leading the league in interceptions, with a pretty high interception percentage, too? What is it, a decision-making thing? Is it a bad offensive fit? Was it just, you know, as you said, seeing ghosts? What led to all the picks?
So the picks started to kind of pick up as the season progressed, for sure. And I would attribute it more to, some of it was just inexperience, young quarterback getting his first real go under tremendous amount of pressure. A lot of it was not his fault. They had a poor offensive line. That's one of the things that's like being rectified. I mean, we're getting a whole new team here, but they're rectifying that, and it needed to be rectified. So they put him in a situation where he's throwing the ball, the preponderance of the plays. There was one game, I can't believe this happened. There was one game, I think it was Chicago on Thursday night, when they got beat by the Bears, who were winless at the time. And they lost them at home on Thursday night. And they didn't throw a single pass. They didn't run the ball once in the second half. Not once. So the circumstances that were around him, I don't think were ideal for developing him. I would describe it as they didn't protect him. Now, some of the interceptions are clearly on him. Some of the sacks are on him. Like, this isn't all just the poorest offensive line. Like, he was slow to get rid of the ball. He was hanging on too long. He was taking, you know, he wanted to extend plays. His body took a beating for it. Those are, I would say, knocks on him. Mm-hmm. But they're knocks that you would have on any young quarterback who's inexperienced. And I am more inclined to believe, and I truly believe this, that, like, he's got a big upside if he ends up in the right place with the right coaches who protect him and develop him a little more, which is why I said, like, in a couple of years, right place, right coaching, he develops. I think you might be very surprised how high end of a quarterback he may be.
Are you a little nervous, and are there folks around you nervous, that after this is done and in a couple of years, you're going to look back and say, I can't believe we traded Howell in order to draft either May or Daniels or whoever the case may be?
If Washington somehow gets Caleb Williams, no. And regardless of how that plays out, because he's from Washington, he looks like a savior, so it doesn't mean he's going to be, but if they could somehow figure out a way to make that happen, I don't think anyone's going to feel that way. But if they take Drake May, okay, who went to the same school and followed Hal and has similar stats, and one of the reasons that Hal won't be here is because everyone understands how awkward it would be for them to be in the same quarterback room together, competing with each other. And to your point, if Drake May doesn't work out, Howell replaces him. Like, that never really made any sense. Mm-hmm. So people are jumping to conclusions today with the trade. Oh, they must be taking Drake May because they can't have Howell in the same room with them. But then they went and signed Marcus Mariota, and they go, oh, well, wait a minute. They're running a more eclectic offense, which means they're going Jaden Daniels. So everybody's trying to connect dots here. I think in the end, two things make sense to me. One, if they're going with Drake May, Sam Howell couldn't be here. It's a human thing. If they go Jaden Daniels, you know, and in either case, I think you would agree with this. You have to have a veteran quarterback in the room. And so the signing of Mariota makes sense, not that he'd play a lot, but that he's been a Heisman Trophy winner. He's been a high pick. He's had all of the ups and downs. He's someone who is now, like, understands what his role is. He's worked with our new, you know, pseudo, I don't know what they're calling Brian Johnson, who came over from the Eagles. He got some title. He's not the offensive coordinator, but he has a title. You know, he's going to work with him to ground whoever this person is that we end up drafting. The only thing that happened yesterday that was a certainty, that there was any, if there was a hanging chat about the whole thing, was, are we going to trade down from number two? That question was answered, you know, yesterday by the trade of Sam Howell.
Good. That's a good hanging chat reference. We don't get enough of those on the show these days. That's good. You must be calling from D.C., where things like that continue to bubble and be important.
We're an end game over here, buddy. This is the election of all elections. This is end game over here.
No kidding. All right, let's see. What else am I going to ask? Oh, are you excited for Bobby Wagner?
I am. I'm very excited about that. I was surprised by this. You know, now thinking about how he had the relationship with Dan Quinn, I guess I shouldn't have been, but I am, you know, him at his stage of his career. There are two parts of this team that were mishandled from a roster perspective very badly, and that was offensive line and linebacker, which we constantly couldn't understand. Ron Rivera, by trade linebacker, really mishandled that position on our roster. So getting him and Frankie Louvu overnight, they've done more for the position than Rivera did for 4 years. So we're very excited about him. We need some leadership in the room for sure. You know, this team has decided the one gift that was left behind was there were so many players that were not under contract. Adam Peters, who's the new GM, really got a clean slate here. They have a lot of cap room. They got a lot of draft capital. But they also had 20-something guys not under contract. So they could pick and choose if they wanted to have any of them return or if they really wanted to flip the roster over. And some of the players that they've brought in, and I think Wagner is a really, really good example of this, is I think there's going to be a leadership quality that they ask of him. Whether he can perform to the level that he has in the past, again, I'm not even sure matters.
Right.
I think they want somebody in the room to help set the standard.
Bobby Wagner might be the best person we've been around. He's certainly on the list.
We're excited.
Yeah, you're going to love that.
My radio booth partner is London Fletcher. Mm. And London Fletcher, who was a semifinalist for the Hall of Fame, is the Iron Man, has had an incredible, incredible career. And he even marvels at Bobby Wagner as the person and the player.
Yeah.
He talks about him like he loves him and admires
him. He's one of the best community people, certainly, I've ever seen. And first and second down, it's playing the run. He certainly still has it. A little question mark as to what it looks like in nickel and whether or not he can still kind of play back in coverage. Bram, it's good to talk to you, man. We need to do this more often. I love when our two cities intersect and we get the opportunity to chat for a little while. Hope you're good, and let's talk soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks,
all right,
Mike.
There you go. There's Bram Weinstein from D.C., voice of the Commanders. And, back in the day when I used to fill in a ton at ESPN Radio, back when I was a rising star in the radio business before I became old and middle-aged, as Maura likes to remind me all the time, I used to work with Bram a lot. I had a fun little rotation of co-hosts on what was then the Doug Gottlieb Show when I would fill in, and Bram was one of them, and Kevin Negandhi, who still does SportsCenter, was one of them. Let's see who else was there. Oh, Adnan Virk was one of them. It was really just a fun group of people, and Linda Cohn would come in and fill in sometimes, and I don't know. I loved it. It was
a
blast.
I like all those names.
I know. Yeah, it was really fun. Jemele Hill a couple of times, but when she was still with ESPN.
Yeah.
I always had fun with everybody, too. Like, it was just great. I'd lead the show, and these people would come in, and I never was in a room with any of them. I was here in a closet doing the show, and they'd be back in Bristol. But, like, I don't know. Somehow, we didn't even have, like, FaceTime or anything. We just sort of did
it. Radio professionals.
Yeah, like, it kind of worked.
You can make that work.
Yeah. Most of them aren't even radio professionals. They're all TV people, but they've got personality, and they were all great. And Bram was always one of my absolute favorites. So there's his thoughts on Sam Howell. He likes him. He has the comp of Kirk Cousins. I've seen other comps of Baker Mayfield. And I think I get the Mayfield one maybe a little bit more than Cousins just because of his seeming desire to push the ball up the field. But I think what you're hearing is maybe more accurate like Cousins, a little bit more aggressive like Mayfield.
And could be a pocket passer like Cousins.
Yeah, absolutely. But also wants to extend plays and run around. That's the real positive I heard there. And certainly the upside potential is great. I think the downside of what I heard, and I really hate to say, these are two words I hate it when you hear them about a quarterback. And maybe I'm just like Tim Couch, David Carr on this, but I don't like seeing ghosts. That's a nerve-wracking. Those are nerve-wracking words, right?
It's Sam Darnold.
Yeah, it's like, once you start seeing ghosts, can you unsee them? And when you've been hit as much as he was last year, beat up, asked to throw the ball, mishandled, right? Can you find your way out of it? We'll see. If he doesn't, I mean, the risk was not so high that it's like you're betting your franchise on it. And if he does, maybe the upside is enough that you do end up with a guy who you like down the road, similar to a Kirk Cousins, and hopefully don't pay him quite as much as Kirk has made over the course of his career. But
yeah. I saw this yesterday. Was it one playoff win? He's total contracts like $330 million.
It's unbelievable. It's just, it's a truly
staggering,
truly staggering job by him and his team of maximizing his value in the
NFL.
It's
the same draft as Russ, right?
Yes. Yeah. Russ went in the third round. He went in the fourth round.
Oh, I thought he was the second round.
No, he went in the fourth round. He went Good. Because they drafted RG3 in the first round. They also drafted him in the fourth round to back up RG3.
Yeah.
And here we are years later, and obviously, you know, kind of a different situation. All right. Let me see here. John Schneider was on yesterday with Wyman and Bob doing the John Schneider Show, which was excellent as usual. And you should go listen to the whole thing. And we'll be kind of using a lot of what he had to say throughout the day. Brock's got a bunch of it in Blue 88. In fact, I think he actually has this one in Blue 88. But it jumped out to me when I first read it and then heard it yesterday. This is John Schneider talking about the guard situation. And remember, they've yet to really go in that direction. They've not yet signed any. Anybody on the offensive line. Here's what John had to say.
Hard to grade. I would say it's more the lack of depth and talent at the position over the years. It has. We've seen it deteriorate. You know, there's not a lot of offensive linemen, you know, making blocks and then doing a sack dance. You know, I mean, it's a lot more fun when you're, you know, the young guys are, you know, playing defensive line. I would think a lot of guys would think that, you know, that's a little bit more fun than, you know, than blocking for, you know, a quarterback or a running back, right? So, yeah, it's just the nature of the position. It takes a special breed to play that spot. But, no, the guys get overdrafted at that position, and in my opinion, they get overpaid.
That last one is interesting. The end of that cut is what I wanted to focus on. Guys get overdrafted at that position, and in my opinion, they get overpaid. He might be right. I mean, certainly we just saw Damian Lewis get what I think is overpaid. Certainly, you know, the guard market has exploded once again this offseason, and guys are getting a lot more money than anybody thought they would. So I understand John's view. Overdrafted, overpaid, that's fine. The flip side is, you haven't had good guard play in like forever. So at some point, the league might be right. You may not want them to be right. You may not want to pay as much for guards as they do. But how many good guards have the Seahawks had in like forever? We've been talking about guard as a position of weakness for basically the better part of a decade. So I get it. You don't want to draft them too high. I get it. You don't want to spend too much money there. But you spent a lot of money at safety recently. I would have preferred that money to be spent at guard, right?
The hard part is, like, the Panthers thought Damian Lewis was worth spending a lot of money.
I know that.
And you had him.
I get it. Like, I mean, clearly there's an element of what John's saying that is accurate. Guards are being overpaid. But you also haven't had a good guard for the most part. You haven't had a good guard situation in a decade. Now, maybe nobody does. And John would say,
yeah. Though, like Gabe Jackson. I mean, Damian Lewis was a high draft pick. They paid Gabe Jackson. We were excited when he came in.
Yeah. Hadn't worked. No. None of those guys have worked. And so, you know, you can say overdrafted, overpaid, but at some point you got to get guys that play the position well. And if that means you've got to overpay for it, then that's what you got to do, because it's been a major weakness, I think, of the team over the course of time. I was surprised by this one. Apparently the new coaching staff likes D. Eskridge.
You know, the staff, the guys that, you know, had evaluated him were very intrigued. This new staff, very intrigued with his past, you know, the college play. And, you know, he's a very highly thought of player coming out of college. And so, yeah, we just want to give him another shot, and we didn't want to, you know, we didn't want to be anywhere else. So we were able to restructure his contract and get him back here, and hopefully he takes the ball and runs with it.
I got to tell you, man, I am so surprised by that one.
I knew you would.
I just am. The lack of productivity on the field, some of the knucklehead stuff off the field, it didn't seem like he was somebody that would be worth retaining and giving another chance to. Maybe he's just so cheap and the speed is still so great that you say, whatever, we can always cut him at any point. Like, who cares? Let's give him another shot.
Do you think they evaluate college film of everyone, or did they go back that far because he doesn't have a lot of
They would almost have. There's almost no NFL film.
That's all he has, yeah.
Because if all you're judging is the NFL film, there's not much to like.
He's got 17 total catches.
You watch him getting, you know, end arounds and just getting smashed, you know, 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage. There's not a lot there. So, yeah, maybe it's that. They think there's something.
We want to give D a fresh start, second chance. You know, if our coaching staff would have been here same as last year, you know, we would have probably said, hey, D, you know, it's might be a good time for you to, like, you know, get a fresh start somewhere else. But, you know, everybody in the building loves him, and, you know, there's a new staff here now. So, you know, we just told him, like, let's try this fresh again. What he gives you is an extremely explosive player with the ball in his hands, and, you know, it's something where it clicks for people at certain times, and we want to give him the opportunity to have that to make that happen here.
Yeah, Andrew at Elma, a longtime texter, says, I really hope them liking Eskridge isn't a red flag. It might be. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're right, though. Maybe they love the talent and there's something in there that they're going to pull out. There sure seems to be a sense in that building. And this is part of what I wrote last night. Again, I hope you have a few minutes to read it, seattlesports.com. I'm trying to piece together what the whole Seahawks offseason is all about and what direction they're taking. And there does seem to be a sense that a new coaching staff is going to, by itself, deliver different results. That's my sense. That they believe that there are players on this roster that were underutilized, misutilized, not brought up to their full potential, and that a different coaching staff, even if it's young, even if it's new, even if it's just starting, is going to be able to get more of the potential than the last one was. That's certainly my sense of things. Dee Eskridge might be an example. Daryl Taylor, who they're bringing back. Now, granted, it's mostly non-guaranteed money, but who they're bringing back is another example. The lack of going big in free agency and trying to, you know, bring in this guy and that guy. Like, it sure seems as if they think that this coaching staff can get more out of some of the players they've had or some of the players that are out there and haven't done a tremendous amount than the last coaching staff could. If they're right, then they've struck gold. If they're wrong, then there are going to be some decisions that we look back on here and say, man, you really probably could have gone another way rather than giving another season to this player or that player who's had enough trouble over the course of their career to show us that maybe that wasn't the right plan. All right, let's take a quick break. Brock is going to be in here in a moment. I got a little of his reaction to Sam Howell yesterday, but I want to pair it with what we just heard from Bram Weinstein. Is Sam Howell good? That question to Brock Heward next on Brock and Salk.